I have been told that I have ruined Christmas, Epiphany, and Easter. Not all in the same year, but there's still time. Generally speaking, it's because the worship service didn't live up to people's expectations. For instance, one year, a young mom told me, "Christmas is a children's holiday, so the worship service should be all about the children. You ruined Christmas for my family and the parts of the service that were better suited to the youth." On other occasions, it's been because the service didn't meet the exuberance and joy that people expect from the high holy days. For instance, one Easter, I mentioned the crucifixion during my Easter sermon. Actually, I've done that every year, but one year I got in trouble for it. It was depressing, the member said, to think about death on such a joyful day. No matter that we were there to celebrate Jesus rising from the dead. The only thing surprising to me about these comments is that they continue to surprise me. And they shouldn't. I think it's really the most insidious part of secular culture that has creeped into the church. This expectation that everything about this season should be merry and bright, that there should be no shadow of the cross at Easter, that there should be no poverty or homelessness or asylum seeking or cow dung at Christmas. Of course, we also bring these same nonsensical expectations to our families this time of year. We say things like, "I'd really hope that my son would put in the effort to take more time off work this Christmas." Or, "I thought the grandkids were going to be more excited about those Christmas presents." Or, "After all the work I did to make this Christmas dinner, the least people could have done was sit at the table and enjoy it for more than 90 seconds. Effortless joy and camaraderie is what many of us hope for at Christmas. But some part of our culture knows how false that is. I'm convinced it's the reason why the Grinch is so popular. Because he's a cute, animated, kid-friendly way to admit that we might not all be feeling merry and bright. That we might have lost the plot somewhere along the way. Maybe the Grinch from the old Grinch movie was a true curmudgeon. But given how many adults are posting memes from the new Grinch movie, it seems that the new Grinch is pretty relatable. There's this meme that says, "When you realize you grew up to be the Grinch." And then it has a bunch of pictures of the Grinch with words, quotes from the movie. For instance, one of them is the Grinch grumbling in front of a cup of coffee, saying, "Pumpkin isn't even a spice." Or the Grinch sitting on the couch after returning home and saying, "I don't know why I ever leave this place." Anyone overscheduled with holiday parties can appreciate that. Or again, the Grinch sitting on the couch, but this time shoveling food into his face, wondering aloud, "Am I just eating because I'm bored?" And then later, he checks his calendar and says, "Oh, 7 p.m., my appointment to wrestle with my self-loathing." At the end of the Grinch movie, spoiler alert, the Grinch's heart still grows, so it's no longer three sizes too small. But he also has a realization, as he says, "It wasn't Christmas that I hated, it was being alone." Which just might be the most relatable thing that the Grinch says. It's hard to even read the newspaper anymore without stumbling into a discussion of how lonely people feel. Just reading the daily top 10 news stories for the last week, I read about loneliness in an article on DNA, in a different article on politics, in yet another article on college life. Almost all of them citing statistics about how loneliness has become an epidemic. And as I've preached before, the health effects of loneliness can be as physically damaging as smoking. And yet for those of us who feel alone, which is the majority of us, more than half of people say they feel alone or left out or like there's no one, not even one person who truly understands them. For those people who feel alone, their isolation can be more acute this time of year. Perhaps that's why the beginning of John's gospel is a perennial favorite. Sure, John leaves out Mary and Joseph, the shepherds, the angels, and the wise men, but he doesn't shy away from the shadows that cast so long. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him, not one thing came into being. What has come into being through him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John, and he came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. John himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. It's no small thing during this week of the shortest days and longest nights of the year to remember that the light is coming. And I don't know anyone who can't use to hear the words from John 1:5 over and over again. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. They're words of comfort that we need to hear, but they're also words of comfort that we need to extend. Like John, who himself was not the light, but who testified to the light. One of the former moderators of our denomination, Jan Edmiston, was blogging this week about Pete Davidson. Davidson is a comedian on Saturday Night Live, and last week he tweeted something concerning enough to warrant a welfare check from the police department. Davidson's depression is well known. After writing about situational depression and clinical depression and taking both seriously, Edmiston writes, "Shepherds are a part of the Christmas story, and it's interesting that people who weren't considered particularly respectable would play such an essential role in an event that changed human history. We need shepherds. We need someone to wrangle us back into the fold and protect us from the wolves when we wander. Whether we're situationally grieving or clinically depressed, we need shepherds. Can you be someone's shepherd this Christmas season?" Edmiston asks. Or as John would put it, "In the midst of someone's darkness, can you testify to the light?" That's part of our call at Christmas. It's part of our call all the time to testify to the light without denying the existence of darkness. One of the strangest places I saw that happen this week was in the New York Times. The writer of one article was telling of the inconvenience of going to church with a baby. She wrote, "When I walk into services on a Sunday morning, I'm usually about 30 minutes late. Our six-month-old wakes up from his morning nap at 10 a.m., right when the first chords of the hymn begin to play in our San Francisco church. My husband and I rush to get the baby dressed and fed and in the car, and we drop him off at the nursery about 20 minutes after all of the other kids have settled in. And then we walk upstairs and we find a seat right as the sermon begins. In this season of life, it would be so much easier not to go to church. And that's not just true of parents with babies." In response, she writes, "More and more churches these days are offering worship services on the internet." She goes on to write about the convenience and temptation of internet church. And then she says, "And yet church calls to me. Going to church, sitting in a room with other people for an hour and a half on Sundays is a non-negotiable for me. At the same time that some people find themselves at brunch with friends or catching up on Netflix in bed, I'm in a padded, stackable chair in the Russian Cultural Center that my church rents for worship services. sitting under a disco ball and listening to a sermon about Jesus. The intention behind live streaming services is a good one, but it presumes God is primarily present to us one-on-one as individuals, rather than as a community of believers. 2 Christmases ago, she continues, my husband and I were dealing with our second miscarriage in 3 months. It was a time that was fraught with anxiety and debilitating sickness. There were so many Sundays when streaming a service would have been easier than getting out of bed, and there were some Sundays I just couldn't get out of bed. But instead of wanting to put on the TV while I wrapped presents, I found myself pulled toward those stackable chairs, the Advent hymns, the communion bread and cup handed to me with the reminder that they were the body and blood of Jesus. I wanted to hear the kids singing off key during the lessons and carol service and smell the musty air of the Russian Cultural Center and eat too many donuts in the common room with people who are church to me. This is the beauty of church. Not that it's perfect or convenient or fits easily into my life, but that without it, my life would be deficient. In the midst of the other people of faith, she found those who would shepherd her to comfort in the midst of her grief. She found those who themselves were not the light, but who testified to the light. And she was reminded that the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. Part of claiming that truth is claiming it not just in the abstract, but in the specific in our lives, in the places where the shadows cast in our lives. And so this morning, we take a moment to light a second set of Advent candles and name the grief and pain and fear and struggle that need Christ's light. We light the first candle to name our grief over loved ones who have died, over relationships that have ended, over the many kinds of loss that we have experienced. May this candle bring light to our grief. We light the second candle to acknowledge our pain. The pain of addiction, the pain of mental or physical illness, of depression and anxiety, the pain of troubled relationships. May this candle bring light to our pain. We light the third candle to name our fears, fears of uncertainty, fears of being alone, fears of people we don't understand or who aren't like us, fears stoked by gun violence and angry rhetoric. May this candle bring light to our fears. We light the fourth candle to recognize the struggles of the world, the struggles of refugees and asylum seekers and those who feel the effects of war, the people who seek homes, shelter, and food, the people who struggle because they are targeted because of their race or religion. May this candle bring light to our struggles. In the midst of all we have named and acknowledged, God is with us. We light this candle to remember that God has come and is coming into the world. The light that is the life of all people shines here and now among us. Amen.